I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
You call it the hump day. We call it the hump show, which, you know, essentially serves as our Wednesday because it's the middle show of the work week and we got to get through this one to head downhill toward the weekend. Thanks so much for tuning in. Lots of your tweets and Facebook posts coming in. Lots of you already submitting questions for Ask Amy Anything, which we will do next hour here on CBS Sports Radio. So on Twitter, After Hours CBS, or my Twitter, you can always find it. If you haven't voted for Touchdown Tuesday, which is the TD of the week, you can do that on Twitter and also on Facebook while you're there to submit your questions. Just look for the bright orange box, but you can also vote for Touchdown Tuesday as well. 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. Gets you inside the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studio. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. We will get back to your phone calls and your reaction to, well, Antonio Brown, other football topics, and of course, Major League Baseball after we spend some time with our national insider. Devastating news from the Brewers today as they lose their NL MVP, Christian Yelich.
I think first and foremost, we feel awful for Christian. This is a guy who's carried us in a number of ways over the last 2 years. He could have been 2.5 weeks away from a repeat Most Valuable Player award. So I think that's where our thoughts go first. From a team perspective, we have a lot of guys in that clubhouse who will hurt tonight. This is a gut punch for a night, and then we need to recover and play really strong baseball. We've been through this before as an organization. 2 years ago, almost to the day, we lost Jimmy Nelson to a similarly freak injury, and we competed at a very high level for the remainder of that season. And I expect our team to compete at a similarly high level going forward.
Brewers General Manager David Stearns, as we welcome in Bleacher Report National Insider Scott Miller from San Diego. So you hear what Stearns has to say about losing Yelich to a broken kneecap the rest of the way. But without Christian for September and potentially October, where does this leave the Brewers, Scott?
You know, Amy, I think much as I hate to say it, I think this is going to be the death knell for the Milwaukee Brewers. I mean, you just can't overcome. This guy was one of the reigning most valuable player, one of the best players in the game. And I think the Brewers pitching is short and has been short. And without Yelich, they're not going to be able to out-hit their shortage in pitching. And the Brewers gave it a gallant fight, but I think they're just going to be short.
That National League Central has been one of the great battles of this season. The Cardinals have had a little bit of a lead atop the division for about 3 weeks or so. What's behind their push to get ahead of the Cubs and, as you mentioned, the Brewers?
You know, it's a combination of things with the Cardinals. They've, you know, since the All-Star break, they've had the best record in the game. They've got a couple things going on, Amy. One, their pitching has been really good. Jack Flaherty is pitching like an ace right now. They've had other guys pitch in from Waka to Wainwright. But the other thing, you know, Yadier Molina's back on an everyday basis. And, I mean, it's like having a pitching coach on the field with the staff. They've been so good. He has been so good. The Cardinals, they've had 10 shutouts this season that their pitchers have thrown.
Wow.
Five of those 10 have come since August 13th, when Yadi Molina has come back from the injured list.
In light of the fact that we've got some pitching staffs with some depth to them, how does this render the wild card? Is it going to have less of an impact, do you think, or be just as important for teams to win their division?
You know, I think, it's a combination. The interesting thing, the way with the wild card and with the expanded playoffs, it's almost – baseball's almost become a little bit like the NCAA tournament in March, where if you get hot at the right time, you can run the table. We saw that with the San Francisco Giants in 2014. They were the wild card team, beat Pittsburgh with Madison Bumgarner on the mound, and then ended up winning their third World Series title in 5 years. And I think where that's concerned, it really helps in a wild card game. We've seen it in the example I just mentioned with Madison Bumgarner. If you have a stud pitcher, for example, if it looks like the Atlanta Braves going to win the National League East, Washington Nationals, unless they fold, are probably going to be one of the wild card teams.
Right.
I don't care whether it's the Cubs, whether the Brewers make a miraculous comeback post Christian Yelich, whoever it is, the Mets, take your pick. I would not want to face the Washington Nationals in a wild card game because you're going to face Max Scherzer. Mm-hmm. And if not Scherzer, you're going to face Steven Strasburg. And those, you know, as much as starting pitching's been diluted by guys not going as long as they once went, there are still a few studs roaming the baseball earth, you know, and you don't want to face one of those guys in the wild card game since it's one game and out.
Scott Miller of Bleacher Report, Baseball Insider, with us here after hours on CBS Sports Radio. So while we're talking about pitching and division leaders, the Dodgers winning their seventh consecutive NL West title, which is amazing. A massive lead that they've had atop the West Division for a long time. And yet still that bullpen is an Achilles heel. So, Scott, how dangerous is that bullpen to their hopes of getting back to the World Series?
Amy, you're right. The Dodgers bullpen absolutely has a chance to be the Achilles heel. That's the weakness. That's what whoever the Dodgers play in the playoffs, whatever team, that's what they're going to have to try to exploit, that bullpen. Kenley Jansen's ERA is a career worst, and you know, he has been wobbly this year. There's no question about it. Now, from the Dodgers' perspective, I think a couple things. One, Joe Kelly, the free agent they signed that pitched really well in Boston's bullpen last year during Boston's World Series run. Kelly was awful early in the year, April and May, but he's gotten a lot better later in the year. So I think he's going to be a key instrument for Dave Roberts in the bullpen in October. I think the Dodgers are going to need Kelly to come up big, and I think he's pitching well enough now where there's a good chance he will. Another so-called secret weapon, if you will, is the kid, the rookie they called up with a big red hair, Dustin May. He's a starter for the future. They think, the Dodgers think, his ceiling eventually is going to be as high as a guy like Walker Buehler's. They really like Dustin May, but they're just breaking him in right now, and they're hoping he will be able to work some relief innings in October. So those are two names I think to remember. Watch Joe Kelly and Dustin May, and maybe even Tony Gonsolin, another rookie who won't be in the rotation. He'll be moved to the bullpen. I think the Dodgers bullpen could rely on those three in large part in October.
Right now, the Yankees and the Astros have the nose in front of the Dodgers for best record overall. Talking about the Yankees, how much do you trust their starting rotation?
Well, yeah, that's, you know, without Luis Severino and some guys we thought they were going to have coming into this year, you know, CeCe Sabathia's knee is not in good shape. It's not exactly trustworthy, Amy. but that said, you know, the Yankees all year have been phenomenal. They've had so many injuries. There's been so many reasons to discard them and to denigrate them, but they continue to come up big. The Yankees, the rotation is not trustworthy, but that bullpen, that's what's going to have to come up big. You know,
right.
the Andrew Aroldis Chapman's and Zach Britton's, they're going to have to play big. If they leak in the bullpen, then I think the Yankees, will not be as powerful as they hope to be in October.
Scott Miller with us here after hours on CBS Sports Radio. The Astros seem like they have the total package. So again, same record as the Yankees. They've got the starting rotation, a couple of different Cy Young contenders, as well as a lineup, though it's been a little bit banged up, but they continue to pound the ball. What's their weak spot?
You know, probably like everybody else, I think the bullpen. You know, I mean, Roberto Osuna's been up and down, and, you know, I think a couple other guys. You know, but that said, I think one key to the Astros, I think that's about it. I mean, you're right. Their lineup has got it going. Alex Bregman, by the way, has played himself into most valuable player conversation. Ooh. I mean, I'm not sure he's going to overtake Mike Trout, but you cannot discuss most valuable player in the American League without talking about Bregman. He has been, especially the last 2 months, incredible. He's played, I think, 140 out of 146 games. He's out there every night. He's producing. Lineup top to bottom, solid. As you said, Justin Verlander, Gerrit Cole, Zach Greinke. You know, Wade Miley, last couple outings has been rough, and that's being nice. But the bullpen is the question. Now, look at A.J. Hinch's history, and he is not afraid to take a lower rotation starter and work that guy or a couple guys in relief. Go back a few years, you know, Charlie Morton was in the rotation. He worked some huge relief innings for the Astros and A.J. Hinch. So I think that's probably what's going to happen again. A.J. Hinch is going to end up maneuvering guys in and out because the bullpen is the one weakness. But I do think the way the Astros run things, the way Hinch run things, I think he's going to have enough options. Because, you know, you don't need five starters in October. In the first round, you only need three in the best of five series. And then once you get to best of seven, you know, you could work it with three. You probably need four. But, mm-hmm. you know, you're going to have an extra guy or two that he can move back to the bullpen. And I think Hinch is going to work that all the way.
So, Scott, before I let you go, we've talked about some of the front runners and division leaders, but certainly we have a full playoff picture that still has to be filled out. What's another team, maybe a dark horse, that you think could be dangerous if it advances to October?
You know, Amy, we started out by early in our conversation talking a little bit about the wild card, and I'm going to go back to that and say the Washington Nationals. I think, you know, the first couple months of the season, they had a lot of guys hurt. Trey Turner, broken finger. Anthony Rendon was hurt. You know, their bullpen was awful, and they've kind of quietly, it doesn't look like they're going to be able to run down Atlanta, but the Nationals, again, pitching in October, their lineup, as long as they're healthy now, Rendon, kind of like Alex Bregman in the American League, Anthony Rendon has worked his way into the National League MVP discussion. He's having that good of a year. I know all year we've been talking about Christian Yelich versus Cody Bellinger,
right?
But you know, now Yelich is hurt, and he's going to end up finishing high in the MVP, but Rendon is going to be in that conversation as well. And I think if the Nationals get through that wild card game, you go into the best of five division series again. Max Scherzer, Strasburg, Patrick Corbin, they each have over 200 strikeouts. They're the first threesome in Washington Nationals / Montreal Expos history to all three have 200 strikeouts, and they can be dangerous, I think, with that pitching and with that lineup. So, you know, believe it or not, I mean, here's the year after Bryce Harper goes and signs with Philadelphia,
right?
But the Nationals could have their one of their better chances if they can get past that wild card game.
Just got to get in. You can follow Scott on Twitter at ScottMillerBBL. He's a columnist for Bleacher Report. We love to have him on the show to talk the national scene in baseball. Scott, thanks so much. We appreciate a couple of minutes.
All right, my friend. Take care, Amy, and we'll talk soon.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
We are in no man's land. Oh, it's not quite that drastic. It is our hump show, and it just so happens that the middle show of the work week is also in between the end of week one with its Monday Night Football doubleheader and the beginning of week two, which will start on Thursday night. And it's a game from inside the NFC South. So Bruce Arians and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers hosting the Carolina Panthers. A little bit later, you'll hear from Cam Newton about his shoulder and the major change that he made. No, not using PEDs. The major change that he made to accelerate his healing in addition to, it's not CBD either, in addition to trying to stay healthier moving forward. And so we'll get a peek at that first game of week number two coming up. I've been delinquent. I have not yet put my own column on my blog. So we're having some network and connectivity issues here. at CBS Sports Radio because of some stuff that's happening at the corporate level. And so we were just having trouble communicating with our digital department. And so I wrote a column and I submitted it, but it's not yet live on our website. It is on my blog. I just need to make it accessible publicly. So I promise I'll do that at the bottom of the hour. 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. And we want to get back to your calls here. Let's talk to Tom, who's in Tucson. Welcome.
Hi, Amy.
Hi, Tom.
Yeah, this Yelich thing, it, you know, it sucks, you know, but...
Yes.
The older I've got in life, you know, I realize that life can be unfair, you know. But yes. You never know when someone else is going to step up, you know.
Right.
And the great organizations, you know, money talks. And if you got money, you got second-tier players that, you know, can step up that are kind of like nobodies.
Well, they're only nobodies until they're somebody.
That's right. Like Nick Foles, you know, he had to come in for Wentz a couple of years ago, and he took him to the Super Bowl win.
Yeah, that was amazing.
But, you know, these guys, you know, on a personal level, I'm sure it does really hurt him and their fans. I'm not a big baseball fan. I'm a big sports fan, but for some reason I never really caught on to a favorite baseball team. But basketball, I remember Walt Frazier. His coming out show was when, you know, Willis Reed got hurt.
Right.
And, you know, he was the devastation, but Reed was the inspiration. So, you know, there's always a positive side to something. So,
agree with that. You know, Tom, you make a really good point, and it's something that happens in professional sports. It almost seems heartless, and yet if you choose to look at it as opportunity, and every injury being the opportunity for someone else to realize a dream or to get a chance to participate, to make an impact, there's a positive to it. But yeah, it's hard in the wake of an injury, especially to a really popular, high-profile player like Christian Yelich. Or we were talking about Nick Foles, too, because Foles just broke his collarbone in the first quarter of his game with the Jags. And so it sucks. I'm a huge fan of Foles. I couldn't wait to see what he was going to do with the Jaguars. And now we have to wait until week 11 more than likely to see him, but it's an opportunity for this young man, Gardner Minshew, and we all need to get to know Gardner Minshew now.
Is it for sure that Yelich is out for the whole year?
Well, yeah, unless he was completely misdiagnosed.
Yeah. Well, you never know. You might do a Kirk Gibson.
gosh, wouldn't that be amazing? I remember that moment as well. I was a lot younger, obviously, but 1988, the walk-off home run with the fist pump. That was amazing. Thank you, Tom. Good to talk to you.
But, I just want to say on the other side, you know, there's some guys that hang around too long and they don't give the other guy to, you know, the guy for the Giants, the quarterback, you know, sometimes I feel like.
Oh, he should just walk away from millions of dollars?
Yeah.
No.
You're kind of old, but
no.
Anyway.
I understand what you're saying, and people want to see the next guy, but why would Eli Manning, who loves football, walk away from millions of dollars on the table? I wouldn't do it. I don't make millions of dollars. I barely make thousands of dollars, but they're going to have to drag me out of the studio. I'm going to be working until they tell me, you're not making any sense, Amy, get out. So, I mean, if someone's willing to pay me to do a job I love, I wouldn't walk away either. Tom, thank you so much for your phone call. Good to talk to you in Tucson. 855-212-4227. Our toll-free line brought to you by Geico with a quick way you can save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on your car insurance. Let's squeeze in Rob, who's in Florida. Welcome to After Hours.
Hey, what's up?
Hey.
So, check this. Okay, in my opinion, first, the AD thing, I think, is just perfect timing. But let's go back to baseball. Like, I've been listening for, you know, some years, and especially some time on this particular broadcast, and you're giving a lot of love to the Dodgers, which, as a Braves fan, I totally understand. In your opinion, what do you think about Donaldson, and should the Braves sign him to a league contract, like a big one?
I didn't hear. Who did you say?
Donaldson.
Donaldson. I mean, I think he's proved his worth. I don't know that I would sign. I'm not sure what you mean by big contract. If you're talking about years or if you're talking about money, certainly he has been a valuable acquisition for the Braves. And I think the nice thing about him, in addition to some of the others who have a veteran experience, is that he's been in the playoffs, as this younger group has too. But he brings a veteran presence and experience, which I don't think you can have enough of that when it comes to October. In terms of giving him a massive deal, again, I'm not sure if you're referring to length of time or money. If the Braves would like to keep him around, I don't know that there are going to be that many other suitors for him, although maybe he's earned a few more looks based on what he's done with Atlanta. But I do like the contributions for sure. I mean, I think he's stepped right in and he's made a difference. At 33 years old, you know, I could see another 4 or 5 year deal depending on how much money they want to commit to him.
Okay, I can see that also, as well as they really got a really good deal with Acuña and with Albies.
Right,
I mean, especially
sure.
with Albies. So, I mean, they're looking really good, but are you telling me that you don't believe in this team as
what?
A true playoff?
I didn't say anything like that, man. Don't put words in my mouth. If you think someone else said that or you think that's what Scott Miller said, fine. But I didn't say a word about the Braves not being a contender.
You, do you think?
No. Wait, Rob, you said, so you don't think. You made it a negative, so don't try to twist it now. If you want to ask me straight up, I'll answer your question, but don't make it sound like I said anything negative about the Braves.
Excuse me, I do respect you.
Thank you.
So, in your opinion, do you think with the squad that they have right now that they are a true, not just a playoff that just clinched? Are they an actual contender to get to the World Series this year?
Of course they are. Absolutely they are. And part of what they did last year, even though they didn't get as far as they wanted to, that's huge. Something that tells me that they are more prepared for that stage is the way that they have beat back every challenge in the NL East. The Washington Nationals have one of the best records in the majors going back to the All-Star break. And yet they have not been able to get any closer than, say, 5.5 games to the Braves. So every single time the Nationals have mounted a challenge, the Braves have responded. And I think it's good for them to fly under the radar. I think it's better for them that they've remained steady as opposed to having to put together some crazy run. Now, their own division is tough enough, so that prepares them. But, yeah, the young guys that got some experience last year in the postseason, I think that's huge. Their pitching staff has been a little spotty. I know they've worked on it for sure. Obviously, every team in the majors, it seems like, or in the playoff picture, it seems like, except for maybe the Yankees, have bullpen questions. But I think that the Braves have more than enough offense to be able to overcome. I love their leadership. I love that they've already faced some adversity and that they've answered in a very strong way, and so I think they're primed and ready.
I like it. All right. Also, Amy, I got one more question for you, okay? So I'm from Pensacola, Florida. I'm always an Atlanta fan. So, okay, after the first Falcons, like, they really blew it. Is Matt Ryan done? Like,
no.
Just is he done?
No.
Is he done? Done?
No.
Like, I mean,
no.
He's not any kind of done receiver in the league. I think, you know, all around, Julio Jones is better than, you know, that guy that's wearing a watch in Cleveland. That's
no,
my idea.
The answer's no. The answer's no. I don't think he's done. I mean, I think it was a hideous game, and I think the Vikings were a really bad matchup for them, and I think it's a healthy dose of reality. But no, I don't think he's done. I need that offensive line to get together and to play really good, really strong, really stout in front of him. They obviously have to do a better job at moving the football. Their run game was pitiful, but credit the Vikings for that. But no, Matt Ryan's not done. Rob, I'm so late. I have to let you go, but thank you so much for calling Pensacola, Florida, the site of the worst sunburn I've ever incurred in my entire life when I was 16 years old.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
He's in the shotgun, looks into the nickel. He gets the shotgun snap. He cocks his arm. He looks and throws a line drive in the end zone. Caught on a dive. It's a touchdown. Tyrell Williams. Down the middle, 2 yards deep in the end zone. A two-headed diving gloved catch. And the Raiders are on the board with a touchdown pass of 8 yards. Carr to Williams.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Kevin Harlan on the Westwood One Radio Network. What a perfect response it was by the Oakland Raiders to all of the Antonio Brown drama. And one of the questions I asked in my latest football column, I was trying to answer some burning questions following week number one, I posed the question, are the Oakland Raiders now America's team? The number of people from inside and out the football industry that I heard say they were rooting for the Raiders and how happy they were for the Raiders in that victory against Denver on Monday night was astounding. You never hear that inside the football industry. And yet, I feel like they've become a sentimental favorite. I did just post my latest column on my personal blog. I put the link up on Twitter, A-Law Radio. It's kind of funny because my personal blog has a basketball background. the blog is called Play by Play, Day by Day. And it's a blog I've had, I think, now for 6 or 7 years. And I write in it when I am so inspired. Generally, it has nothing to do with sports. It's sometimes about the industry and my experiences in the industry. Sometimes it's about my grandmother or my dog or my experiences overseas on different missions teams. But I did post a football column there, so maybe a little bit out of place. But I wanted you to be able to access it if you wanted to get a head start on the reading. And then once it's up on our CBS Sports Radio website, I will, of course, post the link to that. But some of the questions I asked have to do with the new head coaches. Asked and answered. Have to do with the new head coaches. Also, the hype. Was it all wasted on the Cleveland Browns? So I gave my answer to that question, as well as this one. Is Antonio Brown destined to be a perfect angel with the New England Patriots? Now, full disclosure, I wrote this before we found out about his civil lawsuit that's been filed against him by a former friend and associate who accuses him of rape and sexual assault on multiple occasions. I don't know that it negates the question because he denies all the charges. And so innocent until proven guilty, while he now says he will countersue against Brittany Taylor. All of that is still very much in process. So if you want to check out the column, you can see my thoughts. And then we'll wait to find out if there's any other response from the Patriots to this news of the civil lawsuit. But I tell you what, even though John Gruden was speaking last night in response to yet another question about Antonio Brown, I kind of feel like that relief would be even more prominent, and that decision to slam the door is even more decisive following the news on Tuesday.
I mean, my God. I mean, I feel like someone's smashing my temple on the side of the head. Get over it, man. It's over. You know, we were good the preseason without him. You know, we're going to be fine without him. And we wish him the best. But, you know, we gave it a shot. And now New England gets their turn. Good luck to them. But I can't deal with it anymore, really. Sorry.
Oh, a fantastic Hall of Fame candidate moving forward from John Gruden. You know what it reminds me of? This is in the wake of Antonio Brown. Remember when Ben Roethlisberger did his interview with Andrea Kramer on NFL Network and he was asked about Antonio Brown and his first comment was, or his first response was, I really hope his feet are okay. Very wide-eyed. It was very wide-eyed and seemingly sincere, but something tells me he was winning an Oscar for that. I don't know how sincere he was. And to hear John Gruden say, good luck to them, referring to the New England Patriots, we wish him well. I don't know how sincere that was either, but I do like the part about, I feel like someone is taking a hammer to my temples. I so prefer listening to John Gruden, the head coach, than I do listening to John Gruden in the broadcast booth. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio, 855-212-4227. Thanks so much for tuning in. So if you don't know the details, I'll just quickly go over what's in the civil lawsuit that's been filed by this former trainer and former college classmate of Antonio Brown. I do not know whether or not she ever went to police. That isn't in the lawsuit, but this is a civil suit that was filed Tuesday in the Southern District of Florida. And she accuses Brown of sexually assaulting her twice and then raping her once in May of 2018. And she details the allegations. They go back to June of 2017. So we're talking about the last 2 years. And I'm not going to give you all the details, only to say that the first two incidents were not rape. They were more sexual assault, sexual harassment, according to Brittany Taylor. And they occurred at Antonio Brown's home. So one of those homes being in Pittsburgh. The second incident that she refers to, which actually comes with a series of text messages in which he seemingly refers to the incident that she outlines in the lawsuit. Although it's hard to read the text messages, at least it was for me, so I don't know that I would recommend that. I'm not sure you get any extra information, but those text messages are in there. And so that the first incident happened at one of his homes in Pittsburgh, according to Brittany Taylor. The second one happened at one of his homes in Miami, again, according to Taylor. This is her account. And then in May of 2018, she says that she and Brown were out at a Miami area nightclub. Actually, she doesn't say Brown was with her. She just says she was out at a Miami area nightclub. And because she was friends with Brown, she went to his home in Miami, she says, to use the bathroom and to get some food. And that's when he forced himself on her, according to her, and raped her, even though she was screaming and yelling no and resisting the whole time. That's her account of these three incidents in 2017 and 2018. Brown's immediate response through his attorney is that he and Taylor, who's a former gymnast at Central Michigan where they went to school, that they were involved in a consensual relationship and that, yes, they had sex, but it was all part of their consensual relationship. And Brown's attorney has indicated that he will aggressively defend himself, including his right to counter sue. So I would expect that there'll be some type of a lawsuit coming from his side. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. A couple of other things that stood out to me, which I think will be important moving forward. Again, I don't know what happened. I don't know why she's only speaking up now. I do know that rape is a very difficult crime to prove for many reasons. Number one, very often there are only two people there. And so it becomes one person's word against another. And then you're talking about who's more credible, who's more believable. Sometimes there can be physical evidence, but Brown is not denying that they had sex. He's just saying it wasn't forcible. And so in that case, if he's admitting that there was a relationship and that there was consensual sex, or at least he's calling it that, then the physical evidence might not be as helpful. I don't know that she went to police, went to a hospital. I don't know what the statute of limitations is in Florida. She's not asking for exorbitant amounts of money, at least not what you might expect from someone who's accusing a professional athlete. Right now, she's asking for, I think, a little more than $75,000. So we're not talking about millions and millions. She says, though, that because of what happened with Brown, that she's going through near daily panic attacks and also has thought about suicide, which is not off the wall for someone who has gone through a traumatic experience. Now, I'm not saying that I believe her, that I don't believe her, only that the relationship, the connection between having those types of mental health challenges and victims of sexual assault being suicidal, that is not hard to believe. She also says that she's willing to cooperate with the NFL, which I think is significant. If you remember some of the investigations in the past, Greg Hardy comes to mind. The victim in that case didn't cooperate with the NFL and, in fact, disappeared. Now, there was the talk that he paid her off. He paid her to go away. She didn't want to cooperate with the NFL. There have been other situations where those who are accusing football players have declined to cooperate with the league. And the league does not have any legal teeth or legal right to compel an accuser or a witness of any type to come forward. They don't have any subpoena power. So the NFL can't make accusers or victims or witnesses or family members or anything like that testify. Also can't compel law enforcement to give them any type of evidence or any type of notes on an investigation. Though, again, in this case, I don't think that there was one. So the NFL is kind of on its own here and has already indicated that it will investigate. And Brittany Taylor is told, well, she said in the lawsuit through her attorney that she will cooperate with the league. And so for now, that's where it stands. According to multiple reports, the Patriots were completely caught off guard and now has to decide how to proceed with Brown. He was actually scheduled to participate in his first practice on Wednesday. Haven't heard that that isn't going to happen. So we'll see. We'll see whether or not Antonio Brown is out there on the football field with the receiving core, with Tom Brady. If the Patriots choose to take any action, if they don't, the NFL could try to put him on the commissioner's exempt list while the investigation plays out. Right now, all we know is he's been accused of sexually assaulting and raping a former friend and trainer. And I expect we'll hear more on Wednesday. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.